I cut Dakota short to get you back both into the mixer again. So I think we now have Bill Evans and the chief on the line. Am I correct?
Yeah, I'm here. Yeah, I'm here. As long as you got my middle banjo solo in,
I did.
I did. Oh, okay, good. Thank you.
That was done. All right. Well, now we have Bill Evans back, and we heard Big Chief Sonny. Then we slid over and a little bit into Dakota, which is a great tune. I played it before. People heard it before. Now we also have Sonny Osborne on the song.
Bill's a dreamer when it comes to that. As long as you get my special break in, he's a dreamer. He thinks he can really play.
I knew this was going to happen.
Yeah, of course.
I realized I was leaving myself open for abuse of all sorts in a public arena.
You can't do that. I've taught you better than that.
what I was going to say to provide some kind of small segue, because Steve was talking about Ronnie Reno, is do you still have lunch every week with all those guys, with Larry Stevenson, and doesn't Ronnie sometimes join you?
Ronnie does, but not every week. It usually, we just call and say, how about, do you want to have lunch tomorrow? And then the word spreads. Then JD came down last time, I guess it was last week or week before last, and I asked him, I said, what are you doing in town? He said, I came down to have lunch for you guys. And I said, you're not doing anything else? He said, no.
Retirement must be a wonderful thing.
It's good. It really is good. But, you know, JD's older than I am.
A lot older,
yeah,
too.
Yeah, a lot older.
Yeah. 2 months and 2 days.
Oh, gosh. I'm surprised he's still upright.
Now, do you remember what you each had for lunch?
Yeah. JD won't eat off of a food bar, buffet. JD always ordered, but he's got to be different. But anyway, I think he had eggs in the middle of the day yet. So, anyway,
hey, Bill, I've been at some of these, and I will tell you this, that Sonny never eats anything fattening whenever one of these lunch brunch buffets. It's always just the good stuff.
No. Never. Anyway, how's everybody doing?
I'm okay. Yeah, I'm all right. I've been busy since this book came out on Monday, and I didn't really quite know when it was going to arrive at my doorstep, but there it was, and I've received a fair number of orders that have kept me busy going to the post office, and I've got a concert tonight with Dan Crary in Sacramento.
Oh, tell Dan hello. Dan's a good guy. I like him.
Yeah. And last weekend I played with Alan in Madison, Wisconsin, and Chicago. So things are busy.
Yeah, you fly too much, though. I wouldn't do that again.
It's tough. It's not getting any easier, but I appreciate Southwest Airlines at any rate, though, because I'd never have to worry about getting a banjo on board. And so at least I can, you know, take the banjo I want with me and not worry about that.
Southwest is good. They're very good, as a matter of fact. But I don't work anymore. I don't need to be on an airplane.
No.
I'm so stoked. I just don't.
Yeah.
Vincent, I've become good friends with Rhonda, and she flies those little puddle jumpers a lot. And, I worry about that. I really do. But,
yeah. No, I understand that. And you'll never know who you sit next to. You know, I oftentimes will not strike up a conversation. I usually use it as an opportunity to catch up on sleep. Oftentimes the airplanes we take from the West Coast might leave at 6 in the morning, which means I'm up at 3, you know, to get to the airport. But there was one flight where I sat next to Mike Curb. You know who that is, don't you?
From the record, Curb record?
Yes.
Ooh.
Yeah. And I would have never known And then the minute I told him that he was, the minute I let him know that I was a bluegrass musician, he started talking to me about all these old instruments, which surprised me. And so that was an interesting discussion.
But see, that's where we differ, because I won't talk to anybody.
Well, you're
I'm shocked.
Anything like that, I will not. I just won't talk to them.
Well, I'm in that mood oftentimes too, but you never know what'll happen when you do strike up a conversation, who that person might be.
Well, that's true, but see, I don't want to know. that's the whole part. I don't really want to know. And a lot of times, when we were flying some, I would act like I was asleep and not be at all. And I always wear a baseball cap, and I pull it way down over my eyes and just make like I'm asleep. That way nobody can say anything to you.
Yeah.
Antisocial? Is that what it is?
Some people might call it that.
Yeah, but, you know.
Well,
I have the people I like, and that's what I do.
Well, and I would characterize this in other ways, too, where, I mean, I've been with you at IBMA, for instance, walking the halls, or at Spigma, and I think that people who are listening in may not understand that when you're a performer, of Sonny Osborne's stature, you have to be on from the moment you step off the bus to the moment you get back on the bus, and you have to greet people. And I remember being at IBMA, and we could not walk 20 yards. It would take an hour and a half just to walk 30 yards, with all the people that would come up to you. And that, after years and years and years of that, I know that that's an exhausting thing.
It got old. I mean, it really did. And, without it, you would have nothing.
Yeah.
And it's just a bad situation. And I'm really enjoying being retired. And I don't have to dress for anything. I don't have to shave if I don't want to. I don't have to do anything if I don't want to. And it's kind of nice. It gets a little old, but it's kind of nice.
Hey, yeah. Hey, Sonny, right before we patched you in, we were just talking coincidentally about the banjo camp that you and Bill and everybody puts on with Cindy down in Nashville. We were just kind of talking about that, and we went right into trying to find you in the phone system, which we did. And that was just kind of a nice little segue, accidental that it was. We had been talking longer than I thought, and I was kind of running out of time. But
I hope it's good this year. And what it should be, we got the best of everything that we can get. I'll put it that way. And it should be good. It should be free to be good.
Well, Bill went through the teachers this year, which was and he mentioned that Tony Trischka. I hadn't seen Tony, and that's an announcement that is, I guess, well, was made just now. But I mean, I didn't know Tony was coming yet.
Yeah, he was a late addition, and I actually even forgot to say mention that Raymond McLean is also going to be there. So
that's right.
Let's review. It'll be Raymond McLean, Tony Trischka, Alan Mundy, Janet Davis, and me, and Sonny, and Frank Neat. So that is not a bad lineup for a camp that has about 60 students. So it's going to be a lot of fun.
Hey, Sonny.
Yeah, it will be. I think I'm impressed with the way that people actually, they learn something. And I'm really impressed with that, because I didn't think these things would work that good until we started this, and it's pretty good. But you guys are good teachers, though, too.
Boy, you got that right. Hey, Sonny, Bill described you as sort of the spiritual leader. Is that accurate?
Yeah, I can't teach. I can't. I'm not going to say I'm never going to finish what I started saying. But I'm just not. I don't have the patience to do that. And
As spiritual leader, we're going to have you leading a 7 a.m. yoga session. Is that okay with you?
Oh, well, sure. I'll be there. It'll be like maybe 10:30 or 11. No, I'm just going to, just hang around and have lunch and I say, hey, yeah, how you doing, man? Hey, I'm doing good. I don't know how many thousand times I've said, oh, I'm doing okay. I'm doing good. You know, everything's fine.
We will get you involved. Always at one point in the weekend we have some kind of session where we get Sonny to explore, talk about some aspects of his biography or the industry or his career, or, you know, we'll put him together. One time we had quite an unforgettable session where we had Alan Mundy, Bill Emerson, Tom Adams, and Sonny all talking about Jimmy Martin.
Oh, gosh.
Do you remember that?
That was absolutely, that was really, that was it. Engaging.
And you know, the funny thing is, everybody had a little bit different point of view on being a member of one of his bands and working with him.
Well, you know, I have to think about people, banjo players, and a lot of people don't play up to their standard, to their normal standard, for the simple reason, and well, I wondered why, and I just thinking about, I never had that problem, but you know, I've always owned the band. And when you play for somebody, you have to play what they want you to play. And so, I mean, a guy like Aaron McGarris, he has to play what Rhonda wants him to play. And so, a lot of times, I don't mean that specifically Aaron and Rhonda, but I'm just talking about people in that situation. Like Bill Emerson could play anything he wants to play because he owns it. And I could play anything I wanted to play, and nobody can say, you know, well, you shouldn't just play it that way. And you talk about Jimmy Martin, that's what Jimmy Martin and I really clashed, because he tried to tell me how to play the banjo, and I just couldn't accept that. But I think we always in our band, the Osmond Brothers, we always hired a guy like a dobro player or a fiddle player or somebody like that. And I don't know, David Crowe asked me one time, how do you want me to do this? I said, I'm not the fiddle player. You play what you want to play. And I think that you'd have a lot better music, a lot closer music, if you'd let a guy just be free to play anything he wanted to, other than, now I want you to play like a record sound. I want you to do that, do this, do that. If you just leave a guy alone and let him be free to play, I think the thing would be a whole lot better. Do you agree or disagree, Bill?
I think it depends upon the situation, because if you're in, if you're fronting a touring band, I don't know how these guys feel about it, but I was thinking about Sammy Sheeler and the Lonesome River Band. That's a band that has a particular sound, and I bet when Sammy is hiring a guitar player, he wants people to play in a particular way. But usually in my own situation, if I'm putting something together where I'm hiring musicians, I definitely want to let them play whatever they want to play. So, you understand what I'm saying?
Yeah, I understand that, but how can Bill Emerson tell a fiddle player how he wants him to play, because Bill don't play the fiddle?
Right, right.
The concept I don't understand, and Jimmy Martin was the world's worst at that, and I'm not putting Jimmy down, but, no, I'm not either. But anyway... Jimmy would say, do it this way, sport, play it this way. And Jimmy can't play no banjo. I mean, he's there with no picks and a thumb and finger trying to show you how to play. And it just don't work. And it really gets to me in a way, because J.D. says, oh, he showed me a lot. What did J.D. learn from Jimmy Martin as far as playing the banjo is concerned? I just didn't understand that.
Now, was Jimmy giving you these instructions when you were both playing for Bill Monroe?
No. And Bill, I don't know if Bill cared enough. He'd just say, this is a good banjo number. That's all Bill would say. But when Bobby and Jimmy and I worked together, Jimmy was constantly saying, you ought to play it this way, you ought to do it this way, you ought to do it that way. And I finally told him, I said, Jimmy, why don't you take care of the guitar? It seems to me like you're having a hard enough time with the guitar, and then you try to tell me how to play the banjo. And I said, you know, and he said, well, you should get your own band. And I said, you know what? I'm going to do just exactly that. And that's and that's when we left.
Right. Right.
You know, Bill, before I know, Bill, you have a gig you're going to run out to in a minute, but I want to do this. I want to talk to both of you, let both of you talk about, you know, there's a very sad occasion that your friend Sonny Scott Street passed away. And it's very sad. And had been working on a biography, and I understand that Bill Evans is going to kind of pick up the mantle and continue. I'd like for you to talk about that a little bit, if you can.
Well, idea was started, and then Scott said, I can do this. And there is so much, I didn't realize there was so much stuff, I'll put it that way. And I mean, it's a mountain of stuff. And when Scott had cancer, he finally called, and he said, well, this would probably be my farewell call to you. But he said, and then he told me what he was going to do, and his wife boxed everything up, and this is a huge box, and sent it to me, and I just thought, you know what, as far as I'm concerned, it's just overwhelming, and I can't do anything with this, and I just thought, best just leave it alone where it is, and I'm still almost leaning that way, but Bill said to me, you know, I'll finish it, and so, but that just put me an awful lot work onto his plate, and the way I look at it, it's probably not worth that to do it. So,
Bill,
that's where I'm
well, Bill, this is where you can speak.
Now I have to respond.
Yes, you do.
Well, it's an honor to do this, and when you actually look at the story, look at your life, Chief, and you know, from the very beginning, you know, you and Bobby were in the middle of so many things, not only musically, but things that were reflecting what was happening in American culture in general. And you know, have the ability to remember things so well and talk about them. So everything from, you know, I'm interested in exploring everything from not only, you know, what it was like to travel with Bill Monroe when you were 13 years old in your early career, but you know, what it was like in the recording studio working with the best country session musicians of all time. You know, what was publishing like in these days? Touring with Merle Haggard. You know, there were just so many things that, and Johnny Cash even before then. And so it is really daunting to think about how to actually start this process. But what I learned from writing my two books is that you start with an outline, and then you start filling it in, and then the outline, you know, you have to break it down into smaller segments, and that's what we're going to do. And what Sonny is talking about with this material from Scott, who was a friend of mine too, and we miss him very much, is that Scott had done a large number of interviews, not only with Sonny about various aspects of his career, but with other people as well. And that's going to be the beginning source material that we use for this. And I'm looking forward to it. I think it's going to take a number of years to do. You can't just sit and crank a book out like this in a couple of months. If it's going to be good, and I'm hoping it'll be one of the best, you know, music biographies that we've seen in American music recently. And I'm talking to some fairly well-known presses about it, university presses, and they're all interested, which just goes to show how important the story is. And you know, in looking back on this, I think the world needs this, you know, more than they need, you know, another banjo record from me or whatever. And I'm really looking forward to doing something that is different. It's going to be a hard thing, but it's going to be fun.
It's going to be interesting. I'll say that. It's going to be kind of interesting. And once you see all the stuff that's to do, and I've done just about all I can do. I mean, I just know, you know, this is where education comes in, of which I don't have. I mean, you know, I got ninth grade and then a few months of fifth grade, And then I quit right there. I was
no. Sonny, people that listen to this show know that you're an avid reader, that you always have a Kindle going and a Nook going, that you go back and forth. You're very well educated. Let's not do that.
Well, that's true. That's true. Sometimes I read three books at once. That's weird. But that's true. But still, that doesn't, like, how to put this together, I have no idea on this earth. None. And without somebody like Bill, Scott, I'm not really sure that Scott had not reached the end of his knowledge on how to do this. I just don't know. I never asked him that, and I wouldn't even think it. But it's quite a job, and he had so much time involved. Oh my gosh! And expenses is only expenses. And but he did interviews. He has a great interview with Ricky Skaggs and the White Girls, Rick's wife and her sister then. And I mean, there is so much stuff. There's things that I learned about other people from the interviews that Scott did. And it's just overwhelming.
Well,
for
my two cents into where this project is positioned right now, I think it's a perfect thing for Bill, because not only does he have that historical perspective in his undergrad, and I know stuff he was working on as far as the music, but he also lends that whole ability to look at it as a performer and a banjo player and a member of a band without getting so technical. In other words, Bill, I think, can bring that whole expanse of the cultural and historical part of the Osmond Brothers and put it in a musical context.
You have to reword that when you said Bill and banjo player at the same time.
Oh, God.
We're devolving as we go.
Why do I suffer this abuse?
I was trying to help.
There's something about you. Oh, my goodness.
Bill,
I will say this. In a lot of books that I read, whether they're biographies of great musicians, you know, writers have a hard time talking about the music. And this is hopefully where my training many, many years ago, you know, as a graduate student in music out here at UC Berkeley will come in handy. And I'm looking forward to that challenge of you know, talking about things in a way that anyone can understand, but really getting to some of the cool musical things. And, you know, and I have actually said this, you know, many times, even from a concert stage, but I view the work that you did with the Osborne Brothers through the years, you guys were like the Beatles of bluegrass music in terms of just of what you did sonically. And I'm looking forward to talking about that and exploring that, you know, with you.
You know, I understand what you're saying, but I also have another problem, too. And I heard an interview that my brother did on television, and I don't know how long ago it's been, probably within the last 6 or 7 months, something like that. Oh, I know where it was. It was about a year ago. And it was one of those TV shows that they do where they have a lot of people around and they talk to them and then they sing a little bit. And Bobby hardly knew Boodle O'Brien. And then he says, and he tells this story on television about Rocky Top. And it's just not. He didn't tell it right. And so if I go and tell it exactly right, it's going to be completely different than what he said. Mm-hmm. And that makes one of us a liar.
Well, not necessarily. Not necessarily.
Well, why not?
It means one of you remembers it differently, that's all.
There's nothing to remember.
Okay.
I mean, a fact is a fact.
All right.
If something's black and white, and you call it different than that, then you know better,
okay.
You know. And I hate to get into the thing because of that. And I know there's two or three things than that. My sister, for one thing, she did an interview, and there's a lot of just inconsistencies. And I really hate to get into that. But then, the truth needs to be told, I guess.
That's where Bill's going to come in. That's where Bill Evans is going to come in. So there, that's your small task.
I'm going to be like Judge Judy.
Oh, that would be a good approach. That's a good approach.
You would have to be.
I'm not sure that you know, there's always different versions of a story for sure, but that still doesn't change. Well, I'm going to say the same thing that you just said, but in a different way. It doesn't change what happened. And you know, while there might be different versions of a story, and of course one of them is true, there's still things that happened that we're going to talk about. You know, the music, the career. You know, I'm really interested in learning more from you about what the industry was like in the 60s and in the 70s. You've seen so much happen. And I remember you telling me once that, you know, you were driving from Knoxville to Nashville right after Rocky Top had come out, and you were spinning the AM dial. Of course, in those days, you know, we didn't have even cassette players in the car, right? Maybe you did.
Yeah.
But you heard Rocky Top just on every single station, you know.
Yeah, it was like here. I was going from Hendersonville to Nashville, and I had my radio on. I heard it six times.
Yeah.
On six different stations.
I mean, you guys, for that period of time, you had conquered the Nashville industry, and doing that with a sound that you know, always remained true to bluegrass at some level was a remarkable thing.
Well, yeah, but after that happened, with that, I heard it that all those times. I told Bobby, I said, you know what, we beat them this week. I can see what you're saying, and it would be interesting to know all that stuff.
I think so.
This is going to be great.
But we're going to have to get together here pretty soon and actually get started on this thing.
Yeah,
I'm about ready.
Yeah, I'd kind of like to get it done for my 90th birthday.
Yeah. I'd like to get it done before my 70th birthday.
Oh my gosh,
Bill. So you don't have the material yet, then?
No, not yet.
Oh, okay, okay. All right.
But I know what's.
I didn't have nerve enough to send it to him yet.
Okay. I've seen pictures with you, Steve. He sent me a picture of it.
Oh, okay. On a text? Was it part of a text?
I'm actually building a new wing of the house to actually store it, and so as soon as that gets done, you know.
Oh my goodness, that's funny.
This is exciting. This is really exciting news. I just think this is exciting news.
I will say this, and I haven't even, you know, Steve, Sonny and I haven't really talked about, we're talking about this more now than we actually have
in
a really long time, but one thing that I haven't even told Sonny about this is that I actually have been talking to some of the music biographers who I respect a lot. People like Bill Malone, who wrote Country Music USA. He's the preeminent country music historian. There's a fellow named Tom Piazza who wrote, he's written about New Orleans, and he wrote a small book on Jimmy Martin. I had a long conversation with him. And I've gotten tremendous encouragement from all these people, you know, that this is like going to be, there's so much to write about. And they've been very helpful in terms of giving me some ideas on how to get started with this, how to just start digging in. And what the process will be is, you know, we'll start work on a couple of chapters, and I'll write a draft of a couple of them, and then these publishers want to see an outline, and you know, which is basically a table of contents. But in my experience with writing these two banjo books, once you get the outline, you just write to the outline, and so what becomes an insurmountable huge job then is broken down into, you know, 30, 40, 50 small parts, and then you just get that part done. You just get her done. It's just like making a record album, Sonny. You know, think about that. You know, to a normal person on the street, that would be an impossible task. How am I going to make a record album? But you know how to do that, right? And so it's a similar thing. It's a similar thing with the book, although I'd say it takes longer than a record album in my experience.
I'm afraid so. We did our recording stuff was completely different than what you guys do today. I mean, completely different.
Yeah.
Because nowadays you just break it down and do one thing at a time most of the times, and what we did all ours at once.
Well, and you hear how great those recordings are, and it certainly required a kind of musicianship that is fearless, it seems to me.
That's a good word. That's a good description.
It doesn't exist now.
That's a good
word. It doesn't. Although there are bands now that are playing, you know, in live and trying to get everything done in one take, and you know, the record I did with Fletcher Bright with just fiddle and banjo was that same thing. There was no overdubbing on that record. But it's not the same. It's not the same order as what you did with, you know, how many people would you have in the room sometimes? Probably 10 or 12, right?
I think around 12, 13, 10, 12, 13, something like that.
That's just unreal. That's just unreal.
And then we did the vocals all at the same time.
Wow.
Yeah, yeah.
I mean, we did it all at once, everything at once.
Yeah. Now, does that include the cuts that are on the relatively new Nashville record that were from those sessions that never came out? Were those tracks done live?
Yeah, I think they were. Yeah. And you can credit Steve Chandler with a lot of that because he's a good engineer, really good engineer. But those last seven cuts that came out, I think, some of them were made in the mid-70s, if I'm not mistaken. And I have to listen to it again. But that's some of my favorite stuff that we did.
Oh, I love it. Yeah. And you got a hold of the master tapes to that, and you remixed it more recently, right? I mean, you remixed it for this release. Is that true? Do I have that right?
Yeah, I did that. I most certainly did. It's a long story, but when we left Decca, or MCA, I guess you want to call it now. We were halfway through an album, and we got into this terrible situation about who's going to produce who. And so they wanted to give us a producer, didn't know he could barely write his name, you know. And I just said no. And we kind of thought, well, maybe it's time that we get away from this. And so we asked for a release, and they gave it to us, and we bought those seven songs that we had. The music was already completed, and everything was done, and we bought all that stuff. And then that was in 70, probably 75. And then, it hasn't been probably within the last 8 or 9 years ago that Steve Chandler and I remixed it all. And I thought it came out pretty good.
Yeah, it's terrific.
Yeah.
So you've got those master tapes somewhere in the house then, right, upstairs?
I think so, yeah.
Yeah, yeah.
One of the great things about that is Bobby's mandolin, the tone of his mandolin. Mm-hmm. His neighbor was never like that after we left MCA. And I don't know why, but it was never the same. Never, never the same.
Mm-hmm.
His mandolin was just so good on that, I thought.
Yeah, yeah.
But anyway.
So at any rate, I'm trying to get some perspective from some of the writers and authors that I have really respected their work over the years, and you know, straight across the board, they're saying, "Oh God, this is going to be great. There's just so much material to work with." So it's going to be interesting, you know. I'm really looking forward to it. It's, you know, one of the nice things about being a musician anyway, but also being a writer, I mean, here I am, you know, almost 60 years old, but I get to do something totally new that I've never really done before. And that's an option that not too many people have in their career, and I feel lucky and blessed to have that opportunity.
That part really worries me.
There you go, Bill. Just when we're getting warm and fuzzy, there's a shot in the ribs.
No, it's fine. It's fine. It the pressure's on, you know, that's for sure.
No pressure at all. You'll never feel pressure for me about that because I've got 100% confidence in your ability because I've read some of the stuff that you wrote, and I just want to change that completely. No, I have a complete 100% confidence in you and your ability.
Well, thank you. Thank you.
Listen,
you know, guys, I have got to get in my car and head up the road to Sacramento where I'm going to be late.
Okay,
so I appreciate this opportunity.
Bill Evans, it's always a pleasure, man. I'm so glad to get a chance to talk with you and Patch Sunny. It's been a blast.
Chief, I will catch up with you more later here, all right?
Okay, sure.
Okay. You be careful.
I will try to thank you. I'll try to listen in the car on the way up, so don't talk too much trash about me.
Well,
don't drink and drive and please use the cable.
All right.
Don't worry. All right. You guys take care.
All right.
And thank you, Steve, for all your great work, man.
Well, thank you. I appreciate it. Very kind.
All right. Thanks. All right. I'll catch you guys later. Bye bye.
See you, Dale.
All right. Bye bye.
Still on there, Sonny?
That's a good guy right there.
Isn't he, though? Isn't that fun?
Yeah.
I know I think this will be a perfect accidental thing, and I think Bill will be the perfect guy to pick up this book and write it. I just got a good feeling about where this is going to head from now on, and you ought to also.
You
know,
to be quite honest, this has been probably 2 years or maybe 3 years ago that I was talking to Scott about it, and I said, you know, and Bill had offered to help right then.
Mm-hmm.
But I didn't want to muddy the water for Scott. Because Scott was a wonderful human being, one of the best people that I've ever known in my whole lifetime. And so I told Scott, I said, if you ever need help in any part of this, you know that I can't do anything other than what I've done already. But if you need help, Bill Evans has offered to help. And that was all, that's as far as it got. Mm-hmm. So when Scott was diagnosed with cancer, I just thought, well, you know what, we'll just can it and not do it anymore because I can't do anything else about it. And then Bill, I was telling him about it, and he said, I'll finish that if you want me to. And so, man, that just fell right in place.
It's
so I don't know how long it'll take or anything like that, but I feel reasonably certain that Bill will finish it.
He'll finish it, and it'll be thorough. It'll take as long as it takes, but it'll be complete. It'll have all that perspective that Bill has from, and it'll be a wonderful, I think it'll be great. I can't wait.
I think so. I think it will be. With the interviews that Scott has already done, it is really good.
Then, when the book is out, we can talk about casting the movie. Who's going to play Sonny Osborne?
He's gone.
You've outlived all of the big stars you might want in there. There's nobody big enough.
Yeah, that's for sure. So we can't make a movie then.
No, we can't.
No, cancel that right
all
there.
Right.
So what's that really do? Anything interesting?
No, you know, same old, same old. I get to do stuff like this. I get to talk to you and Bill Evans on the radio, and Ronnie Reno is coming up next week, and that was a hoot. And there's always someone in line, the McLean Family Band. I'm going to get a bunch of them around the microphone, and we're going to talk about some stuff. That's why I'm glad Raymond's coming this year. So,
Ronnie, you laugh, Katie.
Oh, my God. My face hurts, honey. I sent you a message. My face hurt. I was laughing so much. And I don't even know what I'm laughing at half the time. It's just the way it is.
That's the whole point. That's the whole point. You sit there and you think, well, I'm laughing. Why am I laughing?
That's right. That's right.
We have lunch and Ronnie's there. I mean, and he laughs. It's really pleasant to hear somebody laugh, but you can hear it for 2 blocks.
Mm-hmm.
And I love Ronnie. Ronnie worked for us six, 7 years, something like that.
Yeah.
He was
dead. He, you know what, Wolf, he said a lot of good stuff about you that'll be playing next Saturday on the show, as you would expect, but he values that time and your friendship above almost all else.
Well, we had some good, really good times together, Ronnie and I did.
Yeah.
Really did.
It's fun stuff. So me, I'm just having fun, man. I'm just doing this, and it just keeps going on and on, and people are lined up to participate, and I get to learn all kinds of new stuff and meet new people and have friends like you and Bill Evans. What more could I want?
Well, that's really good that it's working out like it is, I think, anyway.
Yeah, that's right.
I think so.
Well, listen, next year for UK, we'll try it again.
Oh, my gosh.
That's pretty good.
They waited till a really bad time to choke, didn't they?
They didn't play their best, but, you know, I think that Duke and Wisconsin, they were probably playing as good as any two teams in the country by the time it got that far. So that's fair. That's fair.
They were. I didn't like Wisconsin too much, but I kind of – oh, I'm talking when the brackets first came out, I don't remember who it was I was talking to, and I said, Duke's going to win that thing because they've got the coach. They've got the guy that will not let them lose.
Yeah.
And he won't. He's the best, if not coach all around, the best college coach I think that's ever lived. He just gets the best out of those guys.
He does. He gets them motivated at the right time. You're right.
I've seen him with far less superior teams, and they come out on top.
Yeah.
They like him. They play hard for him. And he tells them, he teaches them how to play hard and to never let up. But they don't. They're good. They are extremely good.
Sonny, how's the banjo selling business right now? We're still doing that?
Yeah, to sell banjos is just a thing that just, it's never going to be a big deal, but it just kind of floats along. And everybody's got the same story. I see Steve Huber occasionally, and then Robin Smith and Frank Need, and they all say the same thing. Sometimes I'll go 2 months without even anybody mentioning anything about a banjo, and then all of a sudden I'll sell 5 in a week.
Really?
And it's been that way since it started in 1998, is when my first one came, and it's been that way ever since.
How many do you, of course, you know how many you've sold. You know how many you've got on the market. What's the total on that now?
I have no idea.
It's probably, used to know.
It's between, I know it's over 300 and probably close to 400.
Okay, that's what I was thinking. Okay, all right, well.
Yeah.
I like mine a lot, and I like playing it. It sounds as close as I'm going to get to something in six figures, you know.
Well, they're awfully good.
Yeah.
I think that in time, these banjos will really, really be extremely good. A new instrument, though, especially a banjo. Now, I bought, in 1956, a banjo, an RV3, original flathead 5-string, that I was the second owner of. And it sounded absolutely terrible. And it reminds me of the way my banjo sounds right now as compared to, let's say, the Granada. But then after about 5 or 6 years of playing that RV3, which was made in 1934, so this would be about 1958 or 59, 60, right in there somewhere, it started really coming on strong and sounding pretty good. And so, in, I would say, close to 30 years, these banjos were really good, I think. And right now, they are, from 98 till now, they're, what, 17 years,
yeah.
Something like that?
Yeah.
So they're pretty good, though. And a lot of people are, that's recorded with them. Bill has recorded with his.
Mm-hmm.
Aaron has a new Rocky Top model, Chief Banjo, and he's recorded with Rhonda with it on a couple of tunes. Bill Emerson has done whole albums. Joe Mullins. Yeah, Joe Mullins has done whole albums with his.
And Kristen has, hasn't she?
Yeah, Kristen has. They're good.
Yeah.
They're better than just the normal, but they're not, and they shouldn't be compared to my Granada or the RV3 or any of those old banjos, because my gosh, they've got that. My Granada's 80 years old.
Wow.
And so, I mean, you can't compare a new instrument with those, you know. And people nowadays that build banjos, they say, well, we're using the same formula, metal and all that stuff, but the whole thing has changed. The wood is different. I mean, this is 70, 80, 90 years ago, and the wood is completely different, and the metal is poured different. And so it's just not, it can't be the same.
No, it can't.
And, but, you know, it is what it is.
Well, they sound great. I mean, I liked every one that I've heard, and excuse me, I really like the one that I have. So I'm thrilled with it. And like I said, I'm not doing six figures for a banjo. I don't care what.
Well, it's almost reaching seven now.
Is it really? Oh my. Okay.
Yeah.
Well, all right.
It's unreal.
It is unreal. Yeah. It is unreal. By the way, the people wonder where the name of this show came from. It came from you. I told you this before. And Bill even mentioned it also. He uses that term, Unreal Bluegrass. This program is not to be something taken, you know, not being bluegrass, but the unreal portion has always come from conversations I've had with you, which end right about there where you make a comment and you say, that's the truth. It's unreal. Well, that's why I thought, well, I'm going to use that in the title.
Well, that's pretty well sums everything up, you know.
Well, I'm going to let you get back to your Saturday. I appreciate it, and I'm so thrilled that I had a chance to talk to Bill again.
It's really good, and I'm glad to talk with Bill and you always. We've been doing this a long time.
Yeah, we have. You know, there's about 22 or 23 interviews with you on my website, and if people want to hear things about Sonny, they can go there and listen for. If they get snowed in, they get snowed in, and they got power, they can listen to 24 hours of Sonny Osborne.
Wow, I get to go this evening at what time is this show? 7 o'clock. About 20 miles from me, 25 miles from me, Larry Stevenson. Is playing in Cross Plains, Tennessee, and I'm going to go watch him play. Because you know why? Kenny Ingram is playing an old banjo that I recorded Roll Muddy River
with. I was going to say it's the Muddy River banjo. I've seen him do that. He does, boy, he plays that really fine. That'll be good. That'll be a good show.
He really loves that banjo.
I will tell you this, he won't let anybody touch it, because I've talked to Kenny when he was there with the band once, and he knows who I am, and he won't, nope. I told Sonny, nobody can touch it. I said, well, I don't want to touch it. Nobody's allowed to touch it. So he's guarding it with his life.
Well, he told me some stories about people. I mean, big name people that wanted to play it. He said,
nope, it's not going to do it.
And Kenny's got such a quiet authority voice. That when he says no, can't do it.
Nope.
I mean, you know what he means.
No, I didn't question him. I didn't question him about it. I just didn't figure I won't go there anymore. But yeah, that'd be a great show. As always, is Larry always has a. And that new album that he did is just great. Well, everything Larry does is just always solid. I'm always happy to see him out.
Yeah, they're good.
Yeah, they're really good.
And I'm kind of looking forward to going up there and seeing them.
Yeah, okay. Well, you enjoy that. I'm going to let you get back to your day, and then when we leave here with you, I'm going to go right to that Nashville. While you and Bill were talking, I pulled up a tune from the Nashville album. I'll start that one, and then I'll get back into another one of Fastest Grass Alive after that. We'll get some Osborne Brothers stuff up there. So,
take care, buddy.
All right. I'll see you later, Sonny. Take care.
Yep.
Bye. There we go. That's fun. You get a chance to talk to two good friends. I always enjoy that so much. And there you heard Bill. That's it. That was the news. If you were paying attention to hints I've been dropping, that Bill Evans is going to pick up and take on a huge task. And Bill will do perfectly on this. with finishing up and writing and putting all the context behind a book that's going to be about Sonny. It'll be about Bobby too, but it started out as a biography about Sonny. But Bill Evans is going to do a great job. Bill Evans is a good friend. Sonny is a good friend. This is going to be a good thing. And we're going to play some music from that Nashville recording, which were the last in the pipeline. There are no more recordings of the Osmond Brothers, according to what Sonny has indicated. So the Nashville album that came out last year, that's it. There's no more waiting. So this is recorded back in the, as you heard him talk, back in the 70s, I believe. So we're going to play from the Nashville album. It's Going to Be Raining When I Die. The reason I pulled that one up is while we were talking, a big thunderstorm dropped right over my head. This is Unreal Bluegrass. Now you know where the name came from. And I'm Steve Martin. I'll be here for a little while. I hope you're enjoying the show. I am.